First up this morning, we're talking about gambling. Now, for many of us years ago, gambling was what we did on Grand National Day, maybe queuing in a smoky bookie to put on a few quid. And whether we won or we lost, we didn't darken that smelly door until the same time the next year. Now, many bookies nowadays look more like upmarket coffee bars, and there's dozens of ways to gamble as you sit in your armchair or maybe even as you lie in bed on your smartphone. And what starts off as a harmless flutter can, however, quickly descend into something that takes over your entire life. Last night I spoke to former GAA star Oisin McConville, to Matt Zarb-Cousin, who lost £20,000 on gambling machines, and to Jim from Gamblers Anonymous. I started by asking Oisin how his gambling began.
I was very young. I was 14 years old. I grew up in a small village in South Armagh. You know, predominantly when I was growing up, I just wanted to be the best Gaelic footballer I could be. That sort of changed at 14 years of age. I walked into the bookmakers. I used a smoke-filled room at the back of a pub. I had my first bet on a horse. I thought it was harmless, but for some reason I was instantly attracted to everything about gambling. And I suppose from that day, this whole set about trying to become the best gambler I could be. Now, to begin with, I control everything about my gambling, so, you know, I control when I gambled, where I gambled, how much I gambled. I'd say by the time I was 17, 18 years of age, it completely controlled me every waking hour. The first thing I thought about in the morning, last thing I thought about at night, you know, the money had gone from small amounts to huge amounts.
How much are we talking, Oisin, when you say huge amounts?
When I started out with 50p's and a pound, each way that small bet to a fiver, to a tenner, to 20, to hundreds. You know, and my last bet was over £10,000, you know. So, you know, that's the way it sort of spiraled for me. Now, in many ways it was a gradual thing, but in many other ways it was quite steep, you know, just how bad my gambling got in a short period of time, you know. And you know what? A lot of what we talk about, a lot of what people talk about when they talk about gambling is the financial implications. And that's real for everybody. And that was very real for me. I had a huge debt when I was finished gambling. I had to go about starting to pay back. I owed over £100,000. Now, that wasn't how much I spent. That was how much I directly owed. That was all, you know, I got a loan guarantor by my family, by my brother-in-law and my sister.
So you're saying it was more than 100,000 that you'd gambled altogether? It was a lot
more? I gambled a lot more than £100,000. But that was
because I think one of the issues, Oisin, when people, I don't really gamble, like I say, the Grand National the odd time, yeah. And I don't have a lot of interest, partly because I worry that I would like it too much. But for someone like myself that's never really been into their gambling, they might hear you say £100,000 or your last bet alone was 10 grand and think, oh, that's madness. How could you not just stop and just say to yourself, oh, no more? But what's going on in your head that makes that impossible?
Well, you know what? I mean, I would have heard a lot towards the end of my gambling, Coppers of On, you know, why don't you wise up, all those sort of things. And you know what? All those things need to be said. And for a lot of me, a big part of me knew I had to cop on. But I was in the grip of an addiction. If you can imagine, we see very vivid images on television of people who are strung out in drugs, in particular heroin.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things they say about that is, you know, that they will do anything to get that next hit. Well, a hit for me at that time was just putting on that bet. So I get a real kick out of winning. Then, you know, I get a kick out of winning and losing, believe it or not. And then it was just a kick out of putting on the bet. For the last 4 years of my gambling, like, I get no kick at all. There was no buzz at all. But I just could not arrest that addiction. I just couldn't arrest it for 1 minute.
Stay there for a second. I want to bring in Matt Zarb-Cousin as well. Matt, you lost over 20 grand on gambling machines. This is it's not necessarily a modern way, because we've got the fruit machines that have been in bars and pubs and clubs wherever for quite a while, but you've also got the online versions of these now on your phones, which just make them more accessible. How did your addiction start off, Matt?
Well, it's very similar to Oisin in the sense that I started off betting £1, £2 a bet, a spin, and it very quickly escalated £10, £20, and then up to the maximum £100 a spin on these machines, which you can find in betting shops that offer roulette and casino games. And that's what I lost all my money on. That was the product that I was addicted to. I found that I could put a better lottery, you know, buy a lottery ticket, put an accumulator on the football. I didn't really have much of a problem with that, but it was the machines really that sort of enticed me, and you very quickly get sucked in. And obviously, in the early stages, you try and rationalise it. You say, "Oh, I'll try and win it back," and you have big wins along the way, and that's what keeps you going. That's what makes you think you can win your way out of it in the early stages, and then eventually the losses just spiral. And I started at 16, very young, similar to Washington, and my addiction lasted for about 4 years. I luckily was able to get treatment, but in that 4 years, I lost £20,000 on machines, which sounds ridiculous, but I mean, they have been described as the crack cocaine of gambling because they're so addictive, and roulette is an addictive game anyway, and it's made five times faster.
Is it all an attack on their senses? So you've got the lights, it's the noises that make you want to just keep going, that buzz off it, Matt?
Yeah, it got to the stage where if I wasn't in front of a machine, it's similar to what Washington said, it's not about winning or the... it's just about putting the bet on. If I wasn't in front of a machine, I was agitated, I was angry, I was anxious. And it just being in the bookies and in front of the machine just calmed me down. It was like a drug. So it just got to that point. And I think it's obviously the amount you can bet. You can bet up to £100 every 20 seconds. The speed of play. All of these factors just create a really addictive product and sort of design. They're designed to make people addicted, I think.
It's almost like being in a fast car. If, you know, when you put your foot in the accelerator, you're getting a certain buzz, adrenaline out of it, so fueling you to go even faster. Oshin, I wanted to ask you, it's a lot of money that you managed to go through. What kind of impact did that have on you? Did you lose any material possessions? Maybe aren't the most important thing, but when it comes to houses, cars...
Luckily enough, I didn't have a house at the time, but certainly, you know, when I was finished up, I mean, I had to sell my car, all that sort of thing. I mean, before that, I mean, I would sell every little thing that I had in order to get that few pound to have that debt. But I think, you know, and again, we talk a lot about the financial implications because they're very real, but on the emotional side of things, like, I was losing a lot more than just money, you know. I suppose when I was finishing up my gambling, I was, you know, financially bankrupt, emotionally bankrupt, self-respect, self-esteem, integrity, relationships, friendships, family, you know, all those things were slowly but surely, you know, filtering away from me.
Because from the outside, you know, you're a big GA star, and a lot of people would have looked at your life and probably thought, like, there's Oshin, he's got it all, you know, he's doing really well in his field. In sports, and he's kind of got it all, but behind the scenes, it's just a completely different story.
You know what? I work very, very hard at keeping that gaze up, at keeping that mask on. You know that, you know, everything in my life was great, so much so that I could meet you in the street, and you could ask me how I'm doing, and not only would I, you know, have a big smile and be able to tell you how I'm doing, I'd almost give you a high five just to make you, you know, realise just how good my life was.
Why do that? Why keep up that facade?
Well, I suppose it was an insecurity thing. I suppose there was guilt and there was shame. I mean, I didn't want anybody to know that I was a compulsive gambler. A compulsive gambler, which also goes hand in hand with being a compulsive liar, because that's exactly what I was. I didn't want people to see that. I didn't want my family to see it. You know, and you're stuck in a vicious circle, because the other thing you don't want to do is you don't want to ask for help, because when you're in that bubble, you see asking for help, you know, first of all, you know that when you ask for help that your gambling career is over. But the other thing is, whenever, you know, you feel, you know, whenever you ask for help, you see that at that time as a weakness. Now, obviously, you know, I can turn that on its head now and say to anybody out there who, you know, who is struggling with a gambling problem, to make sure and share it with somebody, or, you know, go and get that help, because that is the biggest strength that you'll ever show. But at that time, when you're in that bubble and you feel so alone, you know, you that's the last thing you want to do. And I didn't want to drop that gaze. You know, I felt as if, you know, I didn't want people to see that I had a weakness, you know, outside of the person that they thought I was. But, you know, I it's strange because I bump into a lot of people a lot of guys that I played football against, and one of the things they'll say to me is, "Geez, you're a cocky, arrogant so-and-so on the football field." And I don't correct them because, as I say, I spent a lot of time keeping up that gaze. But at times I was an insecure little boy because, you know, I was bottling up a lot of my feelings. A lot of this gambling started from a time when, I went to a grammar school and academically I didn't feel as if I was good enough. Throw a ball in a PE and I was as comfortable as any people.
Yeah, different situation.
There was insecurities that I was unable to talk about, and I shut all those emotions and all those feelings down.
Matt, tell me this. Do you still feel the urge to gamble? Is it still there?
Yeah, it's still there. And I think it affects even people that have given up afterwards. I mean, obviously there's the financial implications, there's the emotional implications, but it affects people's mental health in a way that isn't understood properly. I still have like mood swings similar to when I was addicted, and I didn't get those before I started gambling. And just to echo what Oshin said, the times that you almost at war with yourself when you're addicted, the times that I walked out of a betting shop and I was like, I'm never doing that again because I suffered a massive loss. And then, it creeps up on you again and you find yourself wanting to do it and you feel like you're not normal unless you have another bet, and you have to have another bet and you rationalise it to yourself, and you're just constantly at war with yourself. And obviously, it took for me to hit rock bottom. And it wasn't until I actually wanted to end my own life that thankfully my parents intervened and were able to get me treatment. But if I didn't hit rock bottom, I wonder whether I would have ever recovered from it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't able to gamble for a long time after I hit rock bottom. I had no money, no access to money. I was in thousands of pounds of debt.
Once that spiral begins, you just don't know where it's going to end. And I guess that's, once again, going back to people that have never really been in that situation, that don't understand it. That's what they find difficult to get their head around, Matt.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like the solution is, I mean, I've looked a lot into addiction and the causes and everything. And it is a combination of an individual. Some individuals are more vulnerable to addiction. That's very true, obviously. But there are some products that are addictive. And one thing that we can do is make those products less harmful. So allowing people to bet up to £100 a spin on a machine probably isn't a very good idea. So maybe reducing that to like £2 a spin, which is what we're campaigning for, the campaign for fairer gambling, would be a way of making that less harmful. It's not going to stop people becoming addicted, but like it's going to limit the damage. And that's what we need to do. Otherwise, you never know where that spiral is going to end.
Briefly, Matt, Oshin's already said he's kind of woven in his advice to people if they find themselves in that situation. But from someone that's been there, what would you say to someone that's listening and thinking, do you know what, I recognise a lot of those traits. I feel like I'm in that same place.
Well, GA can certainly help. There's also treatment available through your GP if you get cognitive behavioural therapy. There's various support groups available. But I think the important thing is to be honest with yourself and be honest with your friends and family, because they're the ones that are going to provide those checks and balances and help you. And people will help you if you're honest with them.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much. Jim is with us. Come good and close to that mic, Jim. I know I might seem a little bit intimidating, but I promise you, I am no Stephen Nolan. Jim is here from Gamblers Anonymous. It's a really serious subject, gambling. Do you think, are we finding it easier to talk about things like this, things that, as Oshin said, you can feel so ashamed of?
Just like Oshin, I felt very ashamed, of the things I'd done, I started gambling at an early age too, just like Oshin at 14. Just when my parents bring me away, and I just started off with the 2p machines, and then it just seemed to build on me, and funny enough, I attend Gamblers Anonymous, but I never really, in all the years, 30 odd years of gambling, that I never really backed horses. It was always mostly machines, and I always worked. At 14 years of age, I had 3 wee lads working for me, selling the Belfast Telegraph on the roads, and always worked, always kept a big red pocket in the house, was always full of money. And from that age there, I had always good jobs throughout my life, right up to the minute. I had always good jobs. Thank God, I was always a good worker, but I never ever had money. I'd had all the chances in the world to make big, big money, but gambling took it all away from me.
Tell me this, Jim, what does Gamblers Anonymous do for someone like you or like Oshin or Matt?
Gamblers Anonymous, for me, was a godsend. The night I went down to Belfast Gamblers Anonymous, in Patrick Street. It's now Little Patrick Street. I walked for about 4.5 miles that night, crying my eyes out. I just lost a couple of £1,000 that day. It was money for a holiday. And the greed in me too, I went to the credit union and I borrowed money too. It was to pay off a holiday, and I went around and I paid the lowest amount off the holiday. I think it was £75. Within an hour and a half, I walked out of that bookmaker's with nothing. Walked home again in the lashing rain. When I got home, I just walked into the room and I busted out crying to myself. It was 6.5 years ago. I cried my eyes out and I says, I need help. I already knew about Gamblers Anonymous. And I just said to myself, I walked down that night. And strange, you know, it was almost a laugh in GA. It was an old building that Belfast Gamblers Anonymous had at that time. And I went down at 7:30 and there was nobody there and it was raining. And there used to be a wee sticker outside the window and it says, please buzz for attention. So I kept pressing it and nobody would let me in. And I says to myself, I must be in a terrible, terrible way. The GA won't even let me in. And that minute I pulled up in a car, thank God he did, and he says, you look in Gamblers Anonymous. I said, that night I walked in. That night I wanted to run across, I had it planned in my head to go across the motorway and let the fastest car hit me to take my life. But thank God through Belfast Gamblers Anonymous I didn't. I went in that night. And I have to be honest with you, I went in that night and for the first week, these people got up and spoke and were telling how their lives had all changed and that businesses and all. Because I had sunk that low that I never thought I would ever get out of this rut that I was in. It's called an addiction. I call it an illness. I think that I had an illness, you know. And I still say I have an illness. I'll have the illness till the day I die. A while back there, for 2 days, the madness came back on me and I went gambling again. And I had a tent, you know, I had to go, even walked away from GA. But thank God I got back together again and got back to Andersonstown GA. That's where I tent Monday night now. And my life's back on track now. But I'll be a compulsive gambler till the day I die.
What does that feel like? You said you were on the road to getting back on track, and then you had a bit of a relapse. But what's that? Is it like a hunger? How would you describe that feeling in you whenever you want to gamble?
Yeah, that's the addiction in you. It's, you know, the only people that can talk about really is gambling. Till there, you know, there's great people out there. I'm not here to put anybody down. There's counsellors and all. The only people can really talk is compulsive gamblers. Till compulsive gamblers. And that's how people ask me, how does GA, Gamblers Anonymous, work? And that's how it works. Men and women sit around a table and speak about their own problems and how gambling affected them. I mean, I'm only after leaving the meeting over the night up in Andersonstown that I attend every Monday night. And you know, we an awful lot of young people now coming through because of the new roulette machines that they've put in these bookmakers. And they remind me, if I do go back out there again, hi bad, I can go back to lost in everything I have. And just like Ocean says there too, you lost everything. You lost your pride. You don't. I was going the night. Night when I was going home, I wasn't sleeping. I was trying to find out how I was getting money the next day to gamble. If I hadn't got money, how I could steal money or whatever way I could get money to gamble. And that's all. I was going to work. I had no interest in work. I wanted out of work right away, get over to play them machines. That was my life for 30 years.
It's incredible to hear you talk about it so frankly. When you think back, Jim, do you remember being aware that it was getting out of hand when things were getting bad?
Yeah, I remember. I mean, at the time, sitting here now, you know, I mean, I think back of you all. I have to think back of the damage I caused. You know, I caused an awful lot of damage, you know. I caused an awful lot of damage. Till my morning fire, God have mercy on them. I tortured them people, you know what I mean? I stole on them. And I remember going up and seeing my mother one time in the Royal Hospital. And she was ill, and she had tubes all around her. And I asked her for £20. And she gave me the £20. And I went over and lost it in 2 minutes and never even went back to the hospital. That's the type of rat I was when I was gambling. And that's, you know, it's so easy for me to go back to that because I am a compulsive gambler and it can affect me. I just live day by day. With that meeting tonight in Andersonstown, I know tomorrow I won't gamble because I've heard stories up there from other people that encourage me not to gamble tomorrow.
If there's anyone listening to this, Jim, that's perhaps thinking they can get the better of gambling when it gets too much, so they think, look, I'll never become addicted because I am in control. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I thought that too, you know what I mean? I says, look, every week, you know, for 20 years, every week, I worked for a big organisation in Belfast, and every week I got paid on a Thursday. And I went out at lunchtime and put all my money. I worked 15 to 60 hours, put all my money in the machine. Came back on my lunch with nothing, not even a cigarette. Not the money to buy my lunch or nothing. And I says, cried again then. Next week, I'm not doing that next week. There's no way I'm doing that next week. Couldn't go home and give them a morning fire, the housekeep money, because it was gone. And every week, the same story. I'm not doing that next week. You know, next week came, I could hear maybe, you know, this is the knock said, and see what I lost last week. I'm going to get it back this week. Never happens.
Do you think they'd surely be very proud of you now, considering how
well
you're doing?
Well,
you've turned it around.
Yeah, well, my two parents are deceased now, but my father seen me at my first year pinning, which was a big, you know.
This is 1 year without gambling?
Yeah, 1 year without gambling, yeah. And
what did he say to you?
Oh, the smile in his face. Money couldn't have paid for it, you know. That's the life I want to lead, you know. And I just seen my father with a smile in his face. You know, it made me feel so. And it's like saying, you know, son, I'm proud of you. You know, you've done it. I got my 5 year pin, but he was dead at the time, you know. But I went up and I buried the pin in his grave. It's only through, with me, Gamblers Anonymous has given me my life back.
We've heard a few times, Jim, people talk about feeling ashamed. But one message I want to try and come out of this is for people that have a problem that no one, and you can tell me here more than anyone, nobody chooses to have an addiction.
No, I'd never feel ashamed, you know what I mean? Anybody I see now or anybody that comes into contact with me, the first thing I would tell them, I'm a compulsive gambler. You know, and you do get people, if you're somewhere, you know, that probably was that put their purse back in their bag or something, you know, because don't get me wrong, I was gambling at a ticket, you know, but I tell everybody that I'm a compulsive gambler and I'd attend Gamblers Anonymous. And as I say, I'm trying through Gamblers Anonymous to get my life back on tracks, and it's a great way of life now. All I wanted to do, people say, I had the dream. I think with all this illness, I had the dream of buying big houses and buying houses for my mother and my father and my brothers and sisters. You know, it was a dream. If I hadn't gambled for them 30 years, I could have bought them the houses what I've lost in gambling.
Jim, it's a story that hopefully others will hear and will take heed of. And thanks for coming in. And I said this to Matt and to Oisín as well. Thanks for being so honest about it.
Yeah, I would just like to say to anybody out there, if you have a problem, you know, get the GA. GA will help you. There's Gamblers Anonymous. There's a meeting each night in Belfast. There's an open day on a Saturday where you can call in. And there's Andersonstown meeting on every Monday night at 8 o'clock. And that's where the help is.
Jim, thank you. Really incredible testimony there from Jim, from Matt and from Oisin. You can go to the Gamblers Anonymous website. It's gamblersanonymous.org.uk and it'll tell you where your nearest meeting is if you're not in Belfast. There's also the National Gambling Helpline, free phone 0808 80 20 133. That National Gambling Helpline again, free phone 0808 80 20 133. Our phone lines are open, of course, this morning as well, 030 30 80 55 55. Good morning, Vincent.
How you doing, Vinny? You alright there?
Not too bad. Tell me about your experience with gambling.
My experience with gambling, Vinny, is gambler will take everything away that you hold dear in your life, and sometimes it can take your life. Just listening to Jim there, his story is the exact same as mine, and as most compulsive gambler stories, it's the same. The things you do, you don't want to be doing them. It's just the addiction. And as Jim says, it's an illness for me. It just can take you to the awful places where you can be. I've borrowed money, stole money, basically everything that I could do, you know, and it makes you feel awful about it. But,
and Vincent, what was your Achilles heel? Was it the horses? Was it roulette?
My Achilles heel would have been the horses and the dogs. I was never interested in poker or, you know, the machines or anything like that. But, honey, there's all sorts of different ways to gamble now. You can gamble 24/7. It's a very, very dangerous addiction.
How bad did it get for you, Vincent?
I nearly lost everything, Vinny. You know, I've tortured my family, my close family, my wife and my children. And thank God they still by me because, you know, I wouldn't know what I would do without them. But one thing of more importantly, say, GA, Gamblers Anonymous comes before everything in my life, Vinny, because if I hadn't got GA in my life, you know, I wouldn't probably have a life, because it's a wonderful organisation. And as Jim says, you're listening to like-minded people who come and share their stories and tell the battles that they have. And believe it or not, this just helps you so much. It's a totally magnificent organisation, you know.
What was the turning point for you, Vincent? Because when we talk about this, I always wonder when people are aware, or if they are aware, when it moves from something that's like a recreational thing, putting on the odd bet, to where it becomes a serious problem and you've got to act. So where was that for you?
Well, the turning point for me was when I hit rock bottom. I've been listening to Oisin there. You know, Oisin said he realised he needed to stop when he wanted to get help. You know, I was getting help and I still didn't stop, you know, and as I say, you can only go so far down. Well, either you can go down or you can battle your way back.
What was rock bottom, though, Vincent? What was happening in your life at that time?
Really, I didn't have a life. You know, I was trying to be a husband and a parent. And for some God-forsaken way, I hid it from all. You know, there comes a time when you just have to admit up to what you've done. And, you know, I've done so many bad things to my family and friends. You know, things, even to this day, I still feel guilty about it. But it's one day at a time and one step at a time, and slowly but surely you can build your life back. But I couldn't do it without GA. If a compulsive gambler hasn't got GA in his life, I mean, you know, you can't do it on your own. You need these people. You need that organisation, that men and women to be there for you. The first thing you'd win the GA, you'll get a handshake. And, you know, when we meet each other out in the street, we shake hands, we send each other texts every day, we communicate on the phone, and we're always there for each other. You know, none of us wanted to be compulsive gamblers or put our families through the hell that we did. But Gamblers Anonymous is the only place for compulsive gambling. Where I do now, Vinny, I try my best to help people be around a position where I was, not where I am. I'm in a great place now, thank God. And
do you still have that need, Vincent? I asked Oisin this as well. Do you still feel that desire to gamble? Does that ever go away?
It never goes away, Vinny, but we have a saying down there. We get tools. And the tools are, if you feel an urge to gamble or something coming on, just to lift the phone and speak to someone right away. And there's always a helping hand. There's an ear to listen to. There's a cup of tea. There's a biscuit. There's a drop-in centre. There's everything there to help you arrest this gambling, Vinny. And, you know, and I like Jim and many, many others in GA have got my life back through that place and through that place alone. Yes. You know, I'll always be indebted to it. Thank God it's there.
Vincent, thank you.
And I would just like to say, anybody out there who is suffering from this addiction, as Jim says, and you have given out the addresses, just get down, get help, and there'll be always somebody there to help you, you know.